If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here in Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh. It is December 27th as we record this, or December 28th if you're listening on the main feed. And I'm joined here by Finn Martin, my mentor, my good, long, close, personal friend, as me and Gene O'Callaghan would say. And Christmas is over, our bellies are full, the personal trainer sessions are in for early January. Finn, how are you?
Oh, really good, actually, Kenny. Yeah, really good. A really pleasant time over Christmas. It was busy, but very enjoyable. Saw lots of people. Did a lot of washing up, I've got to say. But, you know, my hands are still looking pretty good. You know, I need it for my, you know, when I'm doing those guitar solos on stage. You know, I don't want anything seizing up. So,
that's no, it.
I had a time of Christmas. How about yourself?
Good. I'm very good. Very good. Excited to talk today. This is a fun episode. This and the Overrun, we're kind of dedicating this to, like, end of year stuff and end of decade stuff. So there's a lot of fun stuff to talk about. But, you know, about an hour ago, before we were due to record this, I was on Facebook and it popped up from the WWE Network that it was 22 years ago today that Sting and Hollywood Hogan faced off at Starrcade for the WCW Championship, where they did the finish with Nick Patrick, who was supposed to do a fast count, but he didn't. And then Bret Hart came out and the belt was kind of put up, and eventually Sting won at a Super Brawl. And, you know, people always kind of are very interested in your take on stuff that you've covered in the past. So I just wondered, 21 years ago, sorry. Is it 21?
No, 22. 22. Starrcade
1997. It is 22. So I was doubting myself immediately. Starrcade 97, 22 years ago. I guess now, looking back, what are your memories of it? And, like, was this a... Where does this lie in WCW's timeline of kind of... Was this the beginning of the end, or was this just a big roadblock? And what are your memories of covering it?
Well, I mean, Starrcade 1997 was the biggest pay-per-view number that WCW would ever draw by a considerable margin. Very, very profitable event. Superbly promoted with the whole Sting and Hollywood Hogan thing. You know, Sting at one point, in 1996, he'd sort of disappeared. Was he going to retire? Then he came back with this new character, which was seemed revolutionary at the time, because he'd been Surfer Sting for so long. He changed a little bit over the years, but stayed pretty much the same. Then he'd come back as the Crow character. I mean, that seems so dated now, doesn't it? The movie The Crow. I mean, but that was such an influential movie. Brandon Lee, wasn't it? I think it did that come out in about 94, I think, that film.
Yeah, Brandon Lee, let me Google it here. The Crow movie, I think it was 94, 95. It was 1994, you're right, yeah.
1994. I mean, it's such an influential movie. Almost like, I mean, I know Joker's obviously been a much bigger hit than that was, but that was almost like the Joker of its era. So, I mean, and then he reinvents himself as this new character. He's lurking in the rafters, doesn't speak, you know, and then for a time it seemed that he joined the NWO and that's all a ruse. Then he turns on the NWO, and I never felt like WCW really got the credit it deserved for that gimmick and that storyline and the pacing of it. You know, but there's a lot of people who had a tremendous dislike for Eric Bischoff, tremendous bias against the company in 96 and 97, especially when the company was doing so well in the ratings and on pay-per-view and at the box office. Certainly a lot of people out there, particularly in the wrestling media, who were upset that their predictions hadn't come true and that WCW had been this huge success. So, I mean, I thought it was a tremendous storyline, and it all led to that match, Sting versus Hogan at Starrcade 1997. And I mean, the buy rate, the number speaks for itself, the level of anticipation for it. So many people wanted to watch this this match and this show. And then the main event was such a disappointment. In fact, the entire Starrcade 1997 event was a massive flop creatively in the ring. Just a dismal show. I mean, it was just like hardly... I don't even think there was a match on there that you would really want to watch twice. Just almost everything was like mediocre at best. And as for Hogan, Sting, you're like, how the hell is this match? How has this match been such a flop in the ring? And it came out like, I think it came out like maybe a couple of years ago. Didn't Eric Bischoff do an interview in which he claimed that they made the decision that they did on the night with Nick Patrick not doing the fast count and that all strangeness on the finish? I think Bischoff's explanation for it was that they were upset with Sting because he turned up for this match and he wasn't in peak physical condition. Did you hear that interview, Kenny? I'm sure you did.
I did hear that. I was going to ask you if that is the case. Do you buy that as, because like to me, if Sting shows up and you don't think he's in shape, right?
Yeah.
Don't you like, because they end up still giving him the belt 2 months later, but it doesn't mean half as much. Like, wouldn't you just give him the belt, and if you didn't think he was up to the job, give him the belt for like 2 months and then put it on somebody else? It just seemed weird to take this whole, you know, story that you'd created and just kind of fuck yourself up kind of thing. Like they'd had this whole story, it was so well done, yeah. And it just seemed, it was like a wet fart to end the show.
I mean, it was everything about it. You've got Bret Hart out there, and he's
hottest star in wrestling at the time, who's brought in as the referee, but then looks like an idiot because he's coming out and battering a referee who did his job properly.
Yes. And everything about it was like, you brought Bret Hart in, you're paying him all this money, and it was like, you're trying to sabotage this guy in his, you know, first significant appearance in the company. You know, it was as if, let's ruin Bret, let's ruin Sting, you know, let's make Nick Patrick look like a fool. I mean, I guess that didn't really matter, but the whole thing was Sting left the ring at Starrcade 1997 with the belt, didn't he? And then we had a rematch the following night on Nitro, if memory serves me correctly. And I believe the television program went off the air as the match was in progress. I'm sure this is correct.
Yeah, and then J.J. Dillon basically for like a while said he had the footage but didn't want to show it yet.
Yeah. And there was, I think it received a record number of complaints that the television program had ended before the match had reached its conclusion, which was by design, actually. This wasn't like a Halloween Havoc 1998. Well, that was yet to come. That was a fiasco for a later date. That was a fiasco for 10 months down the line, with the pay-per-view cutting off during Diamond Dallas Page versus Goldberg. That's correct, isn't it? But in this case, yeah, so there was a controversy over the finish between Sting and Hogan at Starrcade. So then they did the match the next night and they didn't give us finish again. And then they held the title up, and the idea was that it would be Sting versus Hogan at Super Brawl 2 months later, and the controversy would be settled there, which it was, because Sting defeated Hogan that night. And actually, Super Brawl event in February of 1998, that was actually a really good show, and the Sting-Hogan match was a pretty good match that night. So they did kind of redeem themselves there. And that event was very successful as well. This was just before, I mean, February 1998. I mean, we know what happened on pay-per-view over in WWF, don't we, in February 1998, Kenny?
Don't you bring Savio Vega up in this festive season to me.
That's it. You know. That's it. You know. Don't be a Grinch, you know.
And now he's back in MLW in 2019.
I'm just waiting for that tour. You know, Inside the Ropes presents an evening.
You'll be waiting a while. What about? I was going to ask you.
He got to Super Brawl. They gave us the finish that they should have given us at Starrcade, and I think they kind of got away with it because people were still willing to pay to watch the match in February. But it's like one of these strange shows, a strange match. And really, you were just saying before, why would Eric Bischoff make this decision? It was like he was punishing the fans, not Sting.
Well, I mean, the other thing to, I guess, we need to bear in mind is that he did probably have Hogan in his ear every step of the way, trying to kind of, you know, charm him or antagonize him into not doing it. But I guess that's maybe one of the, you know, because I know that Bischoff is very defensive about the idea of, like, you know, that he let Hogan kind of tell him what to do or whatever. But yeah. I'm sure in the story that, that Bischoff had said that Hogan was one of the people who was saying, you know, Sting's not in good enough shape and da-da-da. But, I mean, to me, that excuse doesn't really wash, to be honest. I just think that if you built up 8 months in somebody, like, why? Well,
it was more than 8 months, wasn't it? It was over a year, really, the hype.
So how are you not knowing he's in shape? Like, surely you're seeing him at TV. Is he just, you know, how are you not knowing? Like, it's,
yeah.
But anyway, strange event. You can watch it on the network if you feel so inclined. But
you don't really need to. Just skip to the last 2 minutes of the match, for God's sake. Don't put yourself through that. I mean, far better is the Sting Hogan match at Super Brawl, Feb 98. That's actually a really good match. Hogan puts Sting over there. And it's the whole thing, you know, why would Hogan do this? And think maybe Hogan got so much flack for the way that Starrcade 1997 played out that he felt that, right, we got to Super Bowl, I need to do it properly here. I need to put Sting over. But Hogan as a heel, he was really giving as a heel, wasn't he? He wasn't, you know, he would do the job. He would humble and humiliate himself. He would do the things a heel is supposed to do, which makes the whole outcome, the whole presentation of that Starrcade 1997 finish even stranger. I mean, maybe it was designed to screw Bret Hart. Maybe that was part of his motivation.
Well, Hogan was always clever that he would do the job to somebody when he lost the title, but he would make sure that he was still in the top program.
Yes.
So, like, he dropped the belt to Sting at Super Brawl 8 in February, and then the main event of Uncensored the next month was Savage and Hogan, not Sting, yes, and I think it was Scott Hall at that show. And then when he lost the title to Goldberg on Nitro, I think the next pay-per-view was the Bash at the Beach, where it was Hogan and Rodman against DDP and Karl Malone.
That's right.
So, yeah, he was... That man could politic.
He certainly could, but also just about Sting, you know, when they finally put the belt on Sting at Super Brawl, and that was a really good match, very well received. But Sting really didn't bring it as champ at all. And that, if you go and watch that match, the Scott Hall-Sting match from Uncensored, I mean, it's not a flop to the level of Hogan Sting at Starrcade 1997, but it doesn't have a world title atmosphere. And Scott Hall was never really, to me, a world title challenger. He was always intercontinental level, US title level. That was as far as he was going to go. Some people thought that, oh, yeah, Scott Hall could be world champion. To me, he was never a world champion level guy. And I think he proved that against Sting. And, you know, Sting was not somebody who really brought that pizzazz or that, you know, dynamic performances to his world title reign. So you look back and you think, well, obviously, I don't agree with the Bischoff explanation for what they did at Starrcade 1997. I think it was wrong for them to do that. They should have given us the finish that people paid to see and then sorted it out later. But when Sting finally got the belt 2 months later, got it for real, that is, he didn't rise to the occasion like Goldberg did. I mean, obviously, Goldberg was very green, but he brought a tremendous charisma and energy and presence to his matches. And I don't think Sting did that in 1998 during his short-lived title reign. So, you know, I don't think Sting really distinguished himself as champion, you know, when he finally became champ. But, I mean, there were obviously were factors that perhaps demotivated him. It's a tricky one. When you're making the kind of money that Sting was making, how can you really be demotivated? But at the same time, if you worked in WCW at that time and were around all the things that went on, I guess it would be quite easy to see how somebody would lose their passion for their performance. We've heard all the stories, haven't we? Let's face it, of how that company just sucked the life out of so many people, you know, just extinguish their passion for the business. So, and I think Sting probably was going through other things as well at the time, which may have contributed to his performance level at the time.
Well, I mean, I will say, just kind of as a cheap plug, I've managed to convince Sondra to... So Sondra and I have convinced her to do a review of one 1999 Nitro. And I asked my friend Jamie what one it should be, and he chose for us the post-Starcade 99 episode of Nitro. And I'm about half an hour into it so far, and I've been taking notes. And this show is bonkers. So for anybody who didn't watch WCW around this time, and truthfully, I didn't, because I'd checked out way before December 1999. But if you can believe this, they actually do the main event of Starcade 99 where they redo Montreal, but with Bret in the role of Shawn Michaels, Goldberg in the role of Bret Hart, and Roddy Piper in the role of Errol Hebner. And I don't know if you remember this quote, Finn, but I thought you'd get a kick out of it. So Roddy Piper arrives at the arena the next night after screwing Goldberg, right?
Yeah.
He then is brought with his son to meet Russo, who's off camera. He then does this big impassioned speech about, you know, how, you know, when he was 13 years old, pedophiles tried to pick him up in a car, but he refused and kept his morality. He then says that Russo was probably one of those pedophiles. Talks about how he built the industry with Hogan, and then he, at one point, turns to Russo and calls him a poor, filthy-looking drag queen. And I'm 30 minutes into a 2.5-hour show. So if you want to hear Sondra just basically have a bit of a breakdown, that's what we're going to be reviewing in the next couple of days. Because I wanted to give her a real taste of, you know, because sometimes Sondra will watch Retro Raw and kind of get a bit, you know, bummed out about watching her. And I'm like, you don't understand the hell that was on the other channel by the end of 1999. So that's something to look forward to over on Patreon that will be dropping on New Year's Eve. So... poor Sondra.
Yeah, what a celebration you'll have listening to that.
anyway,
that whole period, I mean, I've blocked a lot of it out. I mean, obviously written about it at the time, wrote about it in Pro Wrestling through the Power Slam years, but I mean, a lot of it I would rather not remember, and in a sense I would actually, I think I'd be interested in listening to that review just to hear your take on it. But, I mean, it was such a rough time to be a fan of WCW. And when Russo and Ferrara had come in October, people had high hopes for them. And, you know, this is it. Could these be the guys to turn this thing around? It's been, you know, in free fall all year. And there was a little bit of optimism at first. But it didn't take long for that to be extinguished. And by the time we got to the night after Starcade, I mean, it was just a disaster. It really was.
Well, listen, Finn, I want to ask you this question, because obviously, you know, we're in 2019, and I know that we had the conversation, I think it was last week, the week before, where you were very questioned AEW and their future, right? And what they're going to be getting up to. So I want to ask you with that in mind. Vince Russo has spoken. Vince Russo has sent out a tweet publicly that I sent to you earlier on, so you'd get a chance to see it.
I saw it.
And here's what Vince Russo says. A photo attached is him and Cody Rhodes, sort of separately, but, you know, for the purposes of the tweet. And it says, yet to get a response. Invite still open to Cody Rhodes and Tony Khan. Following you on Twitter, feel free to follow back for free advice, in capital letters. I want to make pro wrestling healthy again. Again in capitals. Not interested in a job. Just trying to do the right thing. Offer expires December 31st.
I mean, it's such an attention-seeking exercise, isn't it? I mean, Kenny Wright, I'm sure we speak as one on this one.
Go for it. I don't even need to preamble what you're going to say. You speak for me. Go ahead.
Okay. If Vince Russo was genuinely interested in making wrestling healthier and making wrestling better, he would not have put a date on when this expires. I mean, what is he? A pint of milk? You know what I mean? Come on. You know, that should be an open invitation that has no time limit on it. If you genuinely are acting in the best interest or think you are acting in the best interest of the business, why would you say you've got to respond by December 31st? Why would you say that?
I think that we can also agree that just like semi-skimmed, sometimes Vince Russo has gone off. And he needs to be poured down the your sink and move on and buy some long lasting milk.
That's it. That's it.
Anyway, milk puns aside.
But I mean, the thing is, I don't know whether Vince Russo could help AEW. I mean, possibly he could. It's hard for me to believe that.
But I mean, you know, all joking aside, come on. I mean, look at the guy's track record. You know, he has not had a long-term successful run as a writer in 20 years.
20 years, yeah.
So, like, I mean, it's like it would be like inviting an arsonist who keeps burning down your house. And you go, well, he's burnt down three of my houses. I'm not going to invite him over again because I know he would just be sitting in the corner by a match.
Yeah,
I can only buy so many new sofas. So Vince Russo, the arsonist, get that in a t-shirt.
And like, why put it out there publicly? Again, if you're genuinely interested in helping, keep it private. Just send
I feel for him in some ways because, and I don't like to give this, I don't want to, I do think that mental health can be a serious issue. And I do think that Vince Russo has, I feel bad for him in some ways because I think he is somebody who's got some issues. And that he feels very kind of passed on by a wrestling business that he feels he helped create. You know, he feels he helped create the Monday Night War. And he was a big part of the WWF's boom in 19...
He was, without a doubt. We've said this many times.
Yeah, we have. And but the thing is, no matter whether... And I'm not saying it's all his fault or whatever, but like when he went to WCW, it was an absolute train wreck multiple times. When he went to TNA, it was a train wreck multiple times. Like... At the end of the day, I get that he, you know, his story has not maybe been written the way that he wants it to, but I think that the more that he kind of hangs on, does this, it's like, unfortunately, he's just not going to get the chance because no self-respecting person. I mean, can you imagine what people would think if Cody Rhodes and Tony Khan and Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks said, right, guys, we understand the criticism that we've been facing. We've brought in Vince Russo. Can you imagine the response?
Well, it probably couldn't be much worse than the response to the end of last week's episode of Dynamite, Kenny, let's be honest.
I mean, I feel like Russo came in to book that one, to be fair. We'll get to that in a little bit. So, anyway, but all joking aside with that, we should hammer through some stuff here. So, the pre-Christmas SmackDown, the December 20th episode of SmackDown, was so uneventful that it barely... needs to be talked about, but what did you make? Did the show suffer from it being right before Christmas when they're not putting the stories together quite for the Rumble yet, or was it just an uneventful episode?
Well, I mean, we were here the previous week. We hardly talked about the pre-TLC episode of SmackDown because it was so uneventful. And I mean, it's just symptomatic of the overall sort of mood right now amongst most fans towards WWE. It's just you don't need to watch it. If you decide to spend 90 minutes of your life doing something else, that you've probably made the right decision because you haven't missed anything. And I think a lot of people have just tuned out, and maybe they'll come back in maybe next week or the week after when the hype for Royal Rumble really starts moving. I mean, Bayley versus Dana Brooke, it was a long match, competitive match. I mean, that was probably, could have been Dana's highlight of Dana's year, really, when you think about it. So she didn't have such a bad night. But I mean, it just felt like so many people are coasting, like Big E and Kofi Kingston versus Cesaro and Nakamura. It was just another, I mean, nothing wrong with the match. These guys are proficient. We know they're talented. It's like, why are these matches not delivering fireworks? I mean, it's like the fireworks have just got damp and nothing's really happening. And Sonya Deville versus Carmella. And they're saying in commentary beforehand, oh, Sonya's this, Sonya's that. She's a former MMA fighter, blah, 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 blah. And then she loses to Carmella by tap out. I mean, how embarrassing. I mean, she might as well just ask for a release now. I mean, there's no coming back from this for Sonya. I mean, she's never going to make it in WWE beyond this level anyway. She just doesn't have the personality to go any further than this. So it's just pointless. But it's like so many things on this show didn't matter. I mean, really, probably Dana Brooke's match with Bayley was probably the highlight of the night. Ziggler, in the main event, it was The Miz and Daniel Bryan versus King Corbin and Dolph Ziggler. And The Miz, who's, I don't think he's ever going to really recover as a credible act from that whole Bray Wyatt match at TLC, he forced Dolph Ziggler to tap out with a figure four leg lock. When was the last time Miz used that hold and actually scored a win over her name? I can't remember when.
Well, also, there was this weird moment at the beginning of the show, or earlier in the show, when Brian came out, and Brian was, you know, the story, he's trying to make the story with Bray Wyatt work, you know, that he wants to be the old Daniel Bryan who, you know, fought for what he wanted to get and all that kind of stuff. And then The Miz comes out and he's talking about how, you know, you don't know how it feels to have your child, have, you know, puppets and your two-year-old child's caught. And I'm like, that would be fine if he wasn't dressed like he was opening for the Copacabana when he was doing it.
And it's just so apathetic. I mean, Miz just, you can see it on Miz's face that he does not believe in this storyline, that he knows it has been extremely damaging to him. It's been like an act of self-harm, the whole thing. And there's no passion there. There's just no power in his voice or his actions. He's just sauntering out there. He's coasting, he's phoning it in. He knows it's poor. He knows everything about this is really low grade and that it's taking him nowhere. And even though he scored the win in the main event, obviously, I mean, they announced just before the show went off the air. And isn't it weird in recent weeks how Raw and SmackDown, like the timings have been slightly off, where everything's kind of been rushed at the very end? This has happened a few times lately on both Raw and SmackDown, which is very unusual for WWE, which is normally the greatest when it comes to timings of shows. And at the end of the show, after Miz had forced Dolph to tap out to the figure four leg lock, we had King Corbin, Miz and Daniel Bryan in the ring, and then we suddenly had this graphic on the screen which read that Bryan, Miz and Corbin would collide on the next episode of SmackDown in a triple threat match, and the winner will face The Fiend, at Royal Rumble for the Universal title. And it just all seemed quite rushed at the end. Just like it's as if it came from out of nowhere. I mean, we all know who's going to win that match. I mean, as if it's going to be Miz. I mean, King Corbin, there isn't any chance in hell that King Corbin will face The Fiend at Royal Rumble. It's got to be Bryan. So, I mean, in a sense, I suppose the match at least will determine The Fiend's opponent well in advance. We're going to know, what will that be? That'll be like 4 weeks in advance, won't it? That we'll know matches at Royal Rumble is. So, I mean, it's going to achieve something there. This SmackDown was just, Revival versus Heavy Machinery in the traditional Miracle on 34th Street street fight. I mean, you know, it's a tradition that's about as exciting as filing your tax return, isn't it, Ken? Otis ended up being a trending topic on Twitter for a while, and that was probably the biggest achievement of the night as far as WWE was concerned. But even that match didn't really sparkle, and then Revival are complaining afterwards about their wrestlers, not sports entertainers. And you think, oh, where's this going to lead? And then Elias comes out and mocks them in a song. And that was it. And I don't know, it just doesn't feel like anything is really going anywhere. It's like, just feels like SmackDown's existing right now. We're at this time where they so desperately need new stars to be created because there's so much talent that's just not really firing on all cylinders. It's like they're all just waiting for something to happen. And you think each week when you watch one of these programs, you've just had 2 hours of TV time or 90 minutes of TV time, and you haven't harnessed that time. You haven't used it to the fullness of its promise or its potential or its capabilities. And I just feel like that's the case with almost everyone in WWE right now, that there doesn't seem to be any sort of real drive there to create new stars and just to make it better. And I feel like I've said this over and over. I'm sure people are sick of listening to me say it, but I am sure a lot of other people feel the same way.
It's frustrating because you've kind of, you know, you've got a lot of wrestlers who are good wrestlers, but the characters aren't clicking. You know, Bayley is a heel, she's not clicking. Lacey Evans as a babyface just doesn't really seem to work. The Bryan and Wyatt stuff is I'm kind of on board with so far, but that's not really a chance to get out the gate yet. Corbin, I do actually like Corbin, but I just don't think he's a top level babyface. I think he's a mid card one, a heel. Sorry, yeah. Mid card heel, not a top level heel. Dolph Ziggler is just, you know, it's like Jim Cornette had that saying about, you know, how can I miss you if you won't go away? Well, I wish Dolph Ziggler had went away 3 years ago and not come back, and he's still here. And I can't imagine in the world that Fox are sitting looking at this going, so glad we bought this. Because it's so dull. The show is so dull. Like, Raw feels way more interesting than SmackDown. Because it feels like, you know, in Raw, they're trying with people who matter and who kind of, you know, you see guys like Drew McIntyre getting wins, who, you know, you could see being a star next year if they got behind him. But yeah, SmackDown was dire. What did you think of Raw? Raw obviously was the December 23rd edition of Raw. We had a lot of people getting big wins, or not big wins, we had a lot of people getting kind of enhancement wins, like Charlotte and Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy and Ricochet and Drew McIntyre and Andrade. A lot of people getting kind of enhancement wins that it feels like they're going to be building to people in the new year.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, Kenny, is that we've been here so many times before where they've done these things and they've made, like, this small step forward, and it's such a huge leap for WWE to keep it going and to take it to where it needs to go. And they've just got cold feet on so many pushes. I mean, the Charlotte Chelsea Green thing, I was just not in disbelief, because it's, you know, you just expect it by this point. So, I mean, as far as I know, this was Chelsea Green's debut on Raw as a wrestler. I can't recall her wrestling in a match on Raw.
No, she hasn't.
I know she has appeared on Raw before, but not as a wrestler. So we had a little highlight video for her before she came out. And then she did get some offense in against Charlotte. Obviously, it wasn't a squash like some of the other people who were on the show, who put Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy over. And ended up putting Drew over, like Zack Ryder, for instance. But it just felt like such a waste of Chelsea Green, who's somebody who has been in the business quite a while, can do lots of different things, as we saw in Impact Wrestling when she was Laurel Van Ness. She's had some setbacks in NXT. She suffered an injury, was out for quite a while, wasn't she? She was sidelined for quite some time. But she's an experienced talent, and it just seemed like such a waste bringing her out and having her lose fairly quickly to Charlotte to the figure eight. And I was not in disbelief, because, as I said, this is kind of normal now. This is standard operating procedure. And I was kind of disappointed by that. And there were some progress was made to an extent with certain people, like Aleister Black won a squash. He's out there. And then Buddy Murphy walks out right past him. He wins a squash. Then they have a confrontation afterwards. Aleister Black puts his hand out, you know, show respect. Buddy Murphy refuses to shake his hand and, like, intentionally walks into him as he's leaving the ring. And Aleister Black nails him with the black mask. So, I mean, that was something. You know, he's mentioned Drew McIntyre. He defeated Zack Ryder. Then afterwards nailed Curt Hawkins. And McIntyre took the mic and said 2020 would belong to him. I mean, I would like to think that this is going to happen. But how many false starts has there been with Drew so far, Kenny? There's been quite a few, hasn't there?
Too many to mention. I mean, the thing is for Drew is that, well, we should never give them a free pass for something that didn't really work booking-wise. I do think for Drew, something that I noticed being from Glasgow and stuff is, like, Drew McIntyre has a great story, because he went to WWE when he was very young. It didn't quite work out. He was member 3MB and left. Then he came back to the UK and he did really get a resurgence in British wrestling. He helped put that together. Scottish wrestling, he was definitely, you know, one of the top people to do it. And he fought his way back. And he didn't fight his way back as a joke character or whatever. He fought his way back to WWE, being presented as NXT champion, and then he managed to get to WrestleMania and had a match with Roman Reigns, which is a big match on a WrestleMania card. So yeah, he's done all that. That's great, but now he needs to do more, much more. And he's got what it takes. He is someone who, Scottish people sound very hard to take seriously to an American audience, I know. because I am Scottish, and it's very, but he's got a voice that people would believe in, and people buy him as a star in the States. So he's got the look, he's got the promo ability, he can work like nobody's business. So to me, he's kind of ready to go, and I hope they pull the trigger on it.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I mean, there's not really much point saying anything else because it's yet to. I mean, if you just say no, they're not going to do it, then that's being pessimistic and bleak and negative, and you can't say that. And you know, let's just give them a chance, you know, to prove us wrong. What else was on there? Tony Nese versus Ricochet. Ricochet won. So I mean, again, Ken, it just feels like everybody's on hold.
Yeah, like, nothing's happening. The only thing they're doing on Raw, the two things they're doing on Raw is, I mean, we have got the story of Becky Lynch that Asuka has her number.
Yeah.
Which, you know, makes sense. And, you know, Becky Lynch needs a big match to happen. So hopefully the Rumble, her and Asuka can tear it up. So that's at least something. But yeah, you're right. A lot of it seems on hold.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Mojo Rawley and Kevin Owens was like a anything goes match. That was actually pretty good and just showed us. I mean, we all know how talented Kevin Owens is. I mean, that actually was pretty good. Not the match of the night, but not far off. And Rawley had a lot of offense, and Owens won by powerbombing Rawley through a table. Then Seth Rollins and the Office of Pain came out and they destroyed Owens. So, I mean, that storyline was moving forward. I did notice afterwards that Samoa Joe on commentary was really railing on the authors and saying these guys are bad men and blah, blah, blah. And that kind of telegraphed the conclusion to the show. So it seems like Samoa Joe is ready to make his comeback. And on one hand, I'm looking forward to seeing him battle the Authors of Pain because I think that could be good for both men. But on the other hand, I think Samoa Joe's been really good on commentary.
It's a hard one to, I know what you mean. It's kind of like, you he's really good at commentary, you want him to come back. I do want to say, I think the way they did the ending was superb. It really was, you know, the idea that Samoa Joe on commentary when AOP were going to try and put Rey Mysterio through this table, he's not moving. You know, and then he had the line about saying, you know, listen, if I move, I'm not moving for you, I'm moving because I'm going to kick your ass. And that's the kind of badass babyface that people like. You get behind someone who's kind of standing up for somebody. So I thought that the way they presented Joe was pretty clever.
Yeah, that's it. That was probably the big achievement of the show, that and Mojo Rawley actually having some offense against Kevin Owens and having a quite exciting match. I mean, not that it's going to take Rawley anywhere, and didn't really do a whole lot for Kevin Owens either, but it's going to lead to some with Seth and Kevin Owens. I can't imagine they'll have a singles match at Royal Rumble, but I'm sure something will happen in the Royal Rumble match between them. I mean, there's Lashley versus Cedric Alexander. Completely forgot about him. I mean, he was receiving a bit of a push, wasn't he, early in the year?
And Humberto.
Yeah. I mean, he was doing all right. And then, of course, we had to have a contribution from Lana. I mean, it wouldn't be an episode of Raw, would it, without a speech from Lana, Kenny?
I was going to be heartbroken if she didn't get some time to show us how the worst actress in the history of the world can communicate.
Well, I mean, if there's a competition between Lana and Brandi Rhodes, I'd choose Lana every day of the week. Christ almighty. I mean, Lana's got some pizzazz and some life in her. So she interrupted the match, told Cedric that she couldn't have Bob all getting all bruised up because they were getting married next week. Lana said that she was not only the smartest woman in the world, but also the most ravishing woman in the world. And then Lashley, of course, made the comeback and pinned Alexander. And it's the wedding next week, Kenny. I mean, after this week's Raw rating, they're going to be looking for some of that old wrestling weddings ratings magic. You know, years ago, wrestling weddings were always big, big ratings grabbers. And my God, after that number this week, they need an improvement next week. They need that wedding to deliver for them.
Do you think the wedding is going to deliver?
Probably not. I mean, it just feels like I don't think anyone really takes it seriously. I mean, how can anyone take it seriously? And we've had Rusev Lashley once. I mean, it's Are they going to do a match between Rusev and Lashley at Royal Rumble? I guess maybe on the kickoff. Doesn't really feel big enough for a Rumble supporting match, does it? Rusev versus Lashley, especially since we've already seen it once. I mean, it'll probably do all right on the night because, I mean, they do have a lot of fun with these type of segment stroke, angle stroke brawls. And, you know, I would like to see if Lana gets the cake in her face, that could be amusing. I think Lana sort of really does need to, she needs to get her comeuppance to some extent in the wedding because that hasn't happened yet. And I think Rusev, he did quite well on the show. He had like a really short match with Norway Jose. And he does feel like he's quite popular now. And he was saying that how happy he is to be rid of Lana, has no objections to Lana marrying Lashley because, you know, that just, you know, he's single now. You know, he's a bachelor. You know, he's enjoying himself. And Lana is Lashley's problem. So I think, you know, this obviously has been a dismal sort of feud in the way the segments have been laid out. They've lasted too long. The performances haven't been good. No one can take it seriously. But in the end, if Rusev comes out of this heated up as a babyface, it won't have been a total loss. I apologise if I've said that before. I probably have. And so we've got the wedding next week. So I am kind of looking forward to it just to see what they do with it. And hopefully this will draw a line under it, or at least we'll be one step closer to this ending and Rusev moving on and hopefully getting a push. Maybe he can be one of those guys who gets a renewed push in 2020. I mean, we'll have to wait and see.
We will. I did want to ask you about the rating. Obviously, it is a holiday edition, but it was, you know, December 23rd. It wasn't like it was Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. Raw had an average of 1.835 million viewers, one of the lowest numbers they've ever had. Do you think there's cause for concern with the number? I know it's a holiday edition technically, but I mean, it's not a good sign. I think hour three did like 1.6 million.
Wow.
For the last hour. I mean, I actually heard a stat the other day, I think in The Observer, about that 6 years ago in 2013, the NFL game, which was of a similar level to the one that was on this past Monday, did about the same number, like however many million it did. I think the difference in number was 400,000 to whatever it was. Say it was 7 million, whatever NFL games get, I don't really know what they get on average. But the difference in Raw is that 6 years ago, Raw was getting 3.8 million viewers.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And now it's 1.8. Like, to me, I mean, I think that the difference would be, if you argue that TV doesn't mean anything anymore, then you would imagine that the NFL number would have dropped a lot. But if the NFL number of millions and millions and millions has only dropped 400,000, but wrestling has halved, I mean, that's, at what point do you say that's a cause for kind of concern?
Well, I mean, it is a cause for concern. And obviously TV does matter because that's where the lion's share of the money comes from. And Raw and SmackDown have to draw certain figures. I mean, I know we don't have to worry about them being renewed for many years because the contracts have just started again. So it's not an imminent concern, happily. I mean, I'm just glad they're not in a position right now where everything's about to renew, because I would think they would be getting a hell of a lot less money than they did when they signed those deals back in 18. But yeah, absolutely it's a concern because, I mean, you put something out there about the Gavin and Stacey comeback show on Christmas Day, didn't you, Kenny? You put it on Twitter?
Yes.
And I mean, I'm not a fan of that show. I've never seen it. Can't stand James Corden. He's in the same level as Wanks, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, but that did a massive number. I believe it did the best TV viewing figure since Wallace and Gromit, A Matter of Loaf and Death. I think it did, about 11 million viewers or something like that on Christmas Day.
Well, what was interesting, I actually do not like James Corden whatsoever, but I really do like him in Gavin and Stacey. It's the one place that I actually like him. But what was interesting was that when Gavin and Stacey was last on, which I think was 2010, I think the last episode went out January the 1st, New Year's Day 2010, that episode got 10.3 million.
Wow.
But this episode on Christmas Day of Gavin and Stacey, which is the first episode they've done in almost 10 years, did 12.31 million, and it's the highest rated Christmas Day viewing of a show of the decade.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, it's, yeah.
it's a huge number, and it just shows you that people will still watch television, and you know that number speaks for itself. If you're putting out programming that people want to watch, they will watch it. It's that simple, isn't it?
It is, and that's, I think that with WWE, the problem, I mean, because even, you know, with AEW, the numbers came out this week, the AEW, there is still 1.4 million people watching the show, which was the number on the first episode on, what was their first episode, October 2nd?
I think October, it was, yeah.
Yeah, but the problem is that they won't get their advertising money on 1.4 million, they'll get it on the 700,000, 800,000 that watch live. So you need the people to be watching live. So even with Raw, I'm sure Raw, maybe Raw has, but I think Raw has about 400,000, 500,000 on DVR every week. But okay. I mean, if you're DVRing this show, I mean, you're going to, if you're not doing it like we are to, you know, for a job, you're going to be skipping through it. There's no way you're sitting through the full 3 hours going, right, I'm okay, here we go. Rusev and No Way Jose. Need to keep my attention. You go, oh, well, Rusev's winning. I can skip through this or whatever. A lot of people are just going to skip through. So the answer needs to be to hook people more.
And also, years ago, people were recording it, weren't they? I mean, it's not like this is a new phenomenon. I mean, this was happening back in the days when people had VHS recorders. People would still... people years ago would tape it and then watch it later. This is not a new thing. This has always happened. So there's always been the live showing versus in addition to the people watching it at a later date on catch-up or whatever. So, I mean, these numbers that have declined, it's absolutely relevant to bring it up. Of course it is. We should mention, actually, that this week's NXT did 831,000 viewers on Christmas Day, Kenny, which isn't bad, is it, for Christmas Day?
It's a good number, yeah. And the December 18th episode, I think, when it was head-to-head, I can't remember the exact... I think it was like...
795,000 to AEW Dynamite 683,000.
Yeah.
So that was quite an ass-kicking, wasn't it?
Yeah, on the live show, yeah, it definitely is. It's funny to me that, like, I mean, I mean, Ollie and I did live streams, so if we're doing live streams, we're watching both at the same time. I had been watching, if I was going to watch one first, I would probably watch AEW first, but I think that on the December 18th episode, the NXT did a much better job of making me immediately want to see what happened with Rhea Ripley and Shayna Baszler, or with Cole and Balor. It was essentially a takeover show that they had put together. Yeah. And I think that's kind of where what AEW probably needs to do about once every 6 weeks is create almost like a takeover level show. Where you can... Where
everything's peaking. Everything's just geared towards that night.
Yeah, because the good news for them is, like I say, if they've still got 1.4 million people watching, they've not lost people who are watching their show, but they've lost people watching it live. And that is a problem that they need to get back. And so I wanted to touch on
some... Kenny, I mean, that first show, if they're doing 1.4 million, how many people were watching it on DVR later? I don't suppose you know that number, do you? There must have been a lot of people who watched it live and then other people who watched it later as well.
Yes, so maybe initially they had 1.7, 1.8. And it's now down to 1.4. That could absolutely be true. I did want to touch on some end of 2019 stuff. Let's start with AEW since we're talking about it. I mean, I have liked the shows. I disagree with you on some of the stuff. I do think they've done a good job in building new people and creating some new stars. But the Dark Order ending to the December 18th episode is one of the worst things I have seen this year. And I mean, do the Dark Order hold, like, somebody's family member in a basement to gunpoint? Like, what is going on? Because the thing was, they were terrible to begin with, and then they started doing the vignettes, which were fun, and it was a way to maybe reintroduce them and make it a little bit less in your face. And then they beat up every single top babyface.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought it was supposed to be a bit of fun. I mean, they had the video with I can't remember the guy who was there in his hotel room watching it, and it's speaking to him directly. It's like, what's this? And then he joined the Dark Order. And they're supposed to be a mid-level act at best. So,
I mean, this is literally the equivalent. This is the equivalent of in 2001, the X Factor group of X-Pac, Justin Credible, and Albert beating up Austin, Triple H, Kane, and The Undertaker.
Yes, it is.
You'd go, what?
What is this? I mean, they're beating them down. Kenny Omega runs in, Cody runs in, Dustin Rhodes runs in. All these people are out there, basically everyone except for Hangman Adam Page, which they noted on commentary that he's not there. It's all part of the heel turn that's in progress. But it was just like, why are all these top faces falling to these jobbers in masks? And then there's the famous footage that even Randy Orton commented on, and I think Mark Henry commented on it, with the guy throwing the punches that, you know, it's just the worst punches ever on Dustin Rhodes. And I mean, Jim Ross did like an explanation for it, didn't he, on his podcast with Conrad. He did quite a large section on it, didn't he, on that angle.
Yeah. And you got, you know, God bless him, he's got to defend that, because the thing is, like, I for me, the problem is that they did the Jungle Boy Jericho stuff that was so great on that show, where Jungle Boy, you know, who was made to feel like a star, and they did all this stuff, and Jericho's putting him over to the highest degree, and he lasted the 10 minutes and all that kind of stuff. And then you get to the end, and they do this. And, like, the Young Bucks quitting Twitter after this, like, see, if you don't want to be on Twitter a lot of the time, it's probably going to be pretty good for you, and I don't necessarily think you're wrong to not be on it all the time. But yeah, for you to publicly quit Twitter makes it look like you can't hack feedback.
And yeah, if you're going to take criticism, yeah.
And you, if you're going to put something like that out, you need to be able to take it. Because, and then it's, you know, then they found the video of the guy's punches, which made Shane McMahon look like Mike Tyson.
I mean, all sins forgiven, Cena. I mean, it's like worse than the, you know, the famous angle where Shane beats down the, who was it, Cody, Ted DiBiase Jr. and Randy Orton. You know that famous one where he runs out?
Mm-hmm.
Was it the one after Randy Orton had given Vince the punt? I think, was it that?
It was.
And it was like the worst punches, like memorably bad. And it was even worse than that. And it was just... But what I mean, that aside, you've got the Dark Order beating down the Young Bucks, and then you've got all these top faces coming in who are no match for them. And they're all dispatched by the jobbers in masks. And it's just like, how the hell could this... When someone came up with this, how come somebody didn't just stand up and say, hold on, I think this is crap. I think this is abysmal. This is making every one of our top faces look weak and ineffectual. And
well, the story, I guess, is supposed to be the Beaver Boys, who were the jobber tag team, one of which, like you say, was getting mesmerised in the hotel room. Like, that was last week, and now they're beating up everybody in the company. Like, you've went from week 2 to week 153 of the story.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before. To me, the best ever episode of Raw was the one that was broadcast the week before the Invasion 2001 pay-per-view. And at the end, Steve Austin comes out, and he did the reverse of what happened on NXT last week. And that there was how you book this. And, I mean, the faces should have come out. I guess the idea was, oh, the Dark Order's got to look strong, but they're never going to look strong. And the audience absolutely rejected this segment. I mean, they were just groaning. They were just embarrassed. And there's still goodwill in AEW. And my God, they've got to redeem themselves next week, Kenny, for this.
Well, because the thing, I feel like the thing that the AEW has done, I think they have done some good things and they have done some bad things. But one of the things that they've done almost to a fault is having the Bucks and Omega feel just like other guys.
Guys are supposed to be the stars, for God's sake.
So, like, the people who are watching the show, for them, you like, they need to be the stars. And you know, there is almost a sort of respect level that they don't want to come in and just be Hogan. But, like, you kind of need to be more Hogan. Like, you need to be more, like, that's what people are coming. They're coming to watch you. So if you are the, you know, if you're the champions for 6 months and then somebody beats you, then the team are made because they beat you, because people, no matter whether they've watched before or not, are made to see that you, oh, they're the stars. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I know. Because the other thing is, who would have thought we'd get to the end of 2019 and that Kenny Omega in the company where he has creative control is being booked worse than he would be if he'd went to WWE?
I mean, you couldn't make it up, could you? You just couldn't. And, I mean, that segment he was in the other week where he did this little promo from the weight room. And then he started doing bench presses and there was hardly any weight on the bar. And I just thought, well, there's probably a reason for this. But to the lay person who doesn't understand weight training, that bar should have been really heavy. It just should have been.
Gimmicks the bar.
Yeah, and he's just saying, oh, I'm not really a promo guy. Well, you know, well, we know you don't have a magnetic personality in AEW, Kenny. I mean, that's been obvious for weeks now. But don't tell us you're not really a promo guy. You know, there's lots of things that, you know, we don't do well in life. But don't advertise it. You know, like, for instance, it doesn't matter now because I'm not doing Power Slam anymore. But there was a thing I really hated doing in the magazine, and that was DVD review. I hated doing that segment, that section of the magazine. And I thought, when I really put my mind to it, I thought I could do it, but I found it a real struggle. So I got somebody else to do it. Didn't advertise it at the time. And it was just the right thing to do for the magazine. You don't advertise your weaknesses, do you? You just don't. But I'm just astounded that all those faces coming out fell to the Dark Order. And I'm thinking, one face in a minute is going to start knocking these Dark Order fellas down. They're going to start dropping like nine pins and the faces will stand tall and Dark Order will retreat. And it never happened. And I just could not believe that this was booked and that the people who were beaten down were the ones who had a hand in booking it. I mean, talk about an act of self-harm. And just in conclusion, Kenny, we were saying earlier about Vince Russo. And, you know, Vince Russo's offered his help. And after watching that segment that closed last week's episode of Dynamite, maybe I'd be inclined to give Vince Russo a call. Right, Vince, we'd like to have a conversation with you. But firstly, you've got to sign this gag order. Because you're right, you cannot advertise that publicly. You know, we're going to pay X amount of money and we just want to have a conversation with you. Let's hear what you've got to say. But there's got to be a non-disclosure agreement here because, sorry, mate, but you're toxic.
Well, I mean, I'm obviously not going to put any of that into the ether because, you know, Vince Russo should remain in the sink. But no, you're right. The thing is, like, I think AEW have done a really good job of building some new stars, like MJF, like Darby Allin, like Jungle Boy, like Jurassic Express, Private Party to an extent. There are new acts who I think feel cool, right? And they feel like part of the show. And they're the people that you should put stuff behind because they're people who I feel like to a younger audience are going to want to see. But the Dark Order look like they were told that day they were going to be professional wrestlers and they went to Poundland. And got some gear. And yeah. I've heard from loads of people that Stu Grayson's a good wrestler and he was in the Super Smash King Brothers. That's all very well and good, but I don't care. I've never seen him before. So I can only go on what I've seen. And, you know, it's just like a guy and his fat pal to me. That's what it looks like. And they don't belong in the same ring as Kenny Omega and Cody Rhodes and, you know, poor Dustin having to sit. You know, like, Dustin Rhodes is one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life. He's so underrated as a talent, and he had to basically find out later on that he'd sat there through that. That's embarrassing. And the thing about the Young Bucks, I like them. I actually like them more than AEW with some of their matches, but the whole idea, oh, we're not on Twitter because we don't like negative energy. You're promoters. Deal with negative energy. Suck it up. You're paid enough money that your job is to listen to people and to listen to what they think. And if you think that this was good, that this Dark Order shit is good and that people just need to get over it, then you're in big trouble. Because, you know, on one hand, you've got Cody and Jericho doing these brilliant promos and people are, you know, a little bit of the bubbly and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's people are loving it. Dark Order doesn't belong the same show as that. At all. So hopefully to give a positive part to it, what I will say, and I think is a real positive for AEW to take, as they should, you know, hopefully at this point disband the Dark Order gimmick, to be honest. AEW over all the shows they've done since May have got an average of 5,701 people paid to shows. I didn't think they'd get that high before the company started. So if they're able to get over 4,000 people a week, that's a really good sign. But the key is that they need to really... The key to me will be in this January 1st episode do they take the feedback? Because the feedback's not just been from like you, Finn, who has been very critical of them, or whatever. It's been people like me who've enjoyed the shows a lot. It's been universal panning of that segment. So yeah. The key will be, how do you react to that? Because if you don't react to it and you just think it's fine, then you're in trouble. But I've got a feeling that guys like Jericho are smart enough to kind of go, we're dealing with this, right? Like, yeah. He's not going to want to be on the watch of that, I don't think.
No, I mean, the thing is, they need to reinstate the Twitter accounts, stop being in denial, listen to the public. I always used to say, you can learn a hell of a lot more from criticism than you can from praise. And, you know, the whole AEW thing, surrounding themselves with this, you know, these guys walk on water, this echo chamber mentality where we just want to hear people telling us how brilliant we are. Well, when you're the boss, you have to take the rough with the smooth. We both know about that, Kenny. And it's how you react when you're under pressure and when the chips are down or when things are going badly. That's a true test of your character. And that really is how you will be judged by the public. Not, you know, people slapping you on the back and telling you how brilliant you are all the time. Forget all that. You know, you're facing a crisis. How do you deal with it? So to me, the Young Bucks, you know, if they've got any character at all, they'll reinstate those Twitter accounts. You don't even need to acknowledge how terrible that segment was on Twitter. But what they need to do is they need to acknowledge it on the next episode of Dynamite. And what they need to do is they need to hire a dumpster, and they need to have like almost like, do you remember the segment they did with the Spirit Squad when Triple H and Shawn Michaels put them in the flight case to send them back to OVW? They need to do something like that with the Dark Order. And if they have this public acknowledgement that, yes, this segment was terrible, and that Kenny and Cody and the Young Bucks and all the people who were dusting, all the people who were beaten down on December 18th, then beat up the Dark Order. And they need to have a little nod as well to those crap punches from the guy to Dustin. They have to Dustin standing there and no selling it.
I should mention, and you are right, this has to happen on TV. On this week's Being the Elite, they did do a part of it where one of the Bucks threw those bad punches as a joke. But we should see that on TV because, again, nowhere near the amount of people that watch the TV show see that show. So you need to do it on TV.
Do it on TV, beat them all up, throw them all in a dumpster or something like that, and just drive that dumpster off and just never have the Dark Order on TV again. That's what I would do.
I'm with you. Sign me up. Sorry, Kenny.
And if they were to do that, people would forgive them because the audience would look at it and say, these guys are not so arrogant and conceited that they think they're infallible. And that's the message you need to communicate to your audience. We screwed up and we are now atoning for that. We are correcting that mistake. We are fixing it and we are moving on. And that's what I would do.
So obviously, I mean, we talk about WWE all year, so we don't really need to go into WWE. We'll talk a bit more in the overrun and next week. But let's talk about Impact. So Impact 2019, they were very quickly going to, well, I mean, they weren't going to be, you know, no more because Anthem owns them, but it seemed like they were going to be out of commission because nobody was watching them on the Pursuit channel. But then Anthem bought Access TV, so now Impact are on there. And all in all, for Impact, the year is, I feel like it's ending for them better than it started.
Couldn't agree more, Kenny. I think they've really got their acts together. I'm not going to spend too long talking about Impact because I'm always putting them over. But I mean, to me, they've stripped everything down. It's low budget. There's been some major blunders. The Scarlett Bordeaux business, the whole thing with Killer Cross was very regrettable. I mean, there's obviously a lot of budget problems there. They are working on a tight budget and they don't have money to spend on talent. And that is a problem for them in terms of talent retention, especially when people start getting over. So I think there's still problems there in that regard. But creatively, I think they've had a really good year. I mean, it's everything about the show is every segment and every match on the show is designed to serve a purpose. And almost nothing outstays its welcome. There's no wastage at all there. You know, everything is used because it has to be. You know, very much like, you know, you know, like we've all, I mean, I've certainly in my life been in a position where I've been earning very little money, and I've been in that position in life where we didn't have a whole lot of cash. But what you do is you just budget accordingly. So to me, Impact Wrestling has definitely done that. And it's really just looked at, right, what have we got? Let's get as much out of this person or this act as we can. And I think Impact has done that brilliantly. I think Don Callis has done a tremendous job. Scott D'Amore has done a really good job. I think the commentary team is the best in wrestling. I just think they've got a real sense of humour there. There's a lot of wit on that commentary team, and I really think in pro wrestling you need that. And also that, like we were just saying about AEW, you know, you need to accept when you've got it wrong. And I think Impact Wrestling has done that and has really gone back to the drawing board and tried to work out what they can do. And, you know, I think also definitely with Tessa Blanchard, there's been a huge step forward there. It's been her. She's had like a revolutionary year. And it's a shame that she's done all this in Impact, which has got a much smaller audience than WWE. But to me, you know, Becky Lynch has received all sorts of plaudits for her year. Actually, I don't think she's had such a great year creatively. But she's been like there, and she's been this huge star and everything. And I think to me, Tessa has been better than Becky Lynch this year. But sadly, I don't know. What's Impact's audience? Like a 10th the size, 20th of the size of WWE's, maybe even smaller than that. So it's a shame that not as many people have seen what Tessa has done compared to what Becky's done. But I mean, yeah, there was talk, wasn't it? We were discussing it, weren't we, Kenny? When it became clear that AEW was going to get TV and was going to be a proper promotion, there was this thought that will Impact even be around at the end of 2019? I think you might have expressed that sentiment. I think you did, didn't you?
I did. I think that you know, we'd be remiss to not say that without Anthem, there's no way they'd be around. Mm. You know, Anthem have got the money to basically fund them forevermore. Yeah. But at the same time, even though they do have a very small audience and next to nobody really talks about them, what I will say is, what I notice as someone who doesn't watch the show, is that the two things they've done in the last 8 weeks that I see part of it, like in like stuff online, is the throwback episode that you had talked about, and Tessa Blanchard. That's the two things that people have really talked about. So if I'm them, you know, if you've got loads of money and you're like, you know, throwing it everywhere, throw it at Tessa Blanchard, because she's the one person in that roster that permeates outside of the bubble of Impact viewers and people see. And I think that's an important thing for them to, if they've got a star that's working for them, to really do all they can to secure the person.
Yeah, I mean, she's going to leave. I mean, she's got this big match coming up with Sami Callihan, and I would think that she's going to win the title. I would think so, because it just seems like the conclusion to her story. And after that title reign ends, at that point, I think there'll be AEW and WWE will be in, I don't know whether it will be a bidding war, but possibly. I think Becky Lynch has expressed an interest in wrestling Tessa in WWE. And I think she'll, even though her dad's working for AEW, I think Tessa will go to WWE, because that's a safer bet given where we are right now. And I think Tessa can have a big program with Becky Lynch and also with Ronda Rousey. We haven't mentioned Ronda Rousey, Kenny, have we, in this podcast?
We have not mentioned her. I'm sure that she will be being mentioned by us in 2020. I can feel it in my water.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, so Impact creatively, I think, has had a good year. Business wise, as you say, I mean, they're not doing any business. You know, the crowds are still really small, but I mean, they have cut the costs and they're still there, and they are definitely in a better position than they were on January 1st. So good for them. And the more promotions that are around, the better, for obvious reasons.
So we should also quickly touch on Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor is a company that not that many people speak about. Obviously, they're kind of, you know, we don't know if they've lost Marty Scurll yet. They've put the belt on PCO. They had the huge show at Madison Square Garden in conjunction with New Japan Pro Wrestling. That partnership now seems to be gone. So nobody really seems to talk about ROH anymore. And I can't really think of a bigger fall from grace for a company in recent memory than being in a Madison Square Garden show.
You know, sold out well in advance.
That sold out well in advance, and then in between you putting tickets on sale. Now, I could be wrong, and I haven't been able to find this, so maybe I'm just making it up. I am positive that when that Madison Square Garden show got announced, that Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks and Cody, there was a graphic for that show with them on it when tickets went on sale. I'm sure of it. Anyway, but, you know, then they all leave. Then they do the show, and, you know, New Japan are part of it. But from that show on April 5th or whatever it was to now... Now nobody talks about it. Why do people not talk about Ring of Honor, do you think? Why does it not connect with people?
Well, I think partly because Kenny and the Bucks and Cody, they all left. I think Hangman Page was there as well, wasn't he? He was there. So they all left and they were like the big stars that I think had really driven this company to the heights that it had reached in 2017 and 2018. So they left, and that was, they weren't able to fill that void. As you say, they had the New Japan connection. Looking at the results for Final Battle, that's now over. We should mention that Chris Jericho's wrestling Tanahashi, isn't he, on the second New Japan Dome show, yes. Night 2 of the Wrestle Kingdom. And I think it's been said by Tanahashi that should he beat Jericho, then he's going to campaign for an AEW world title match. So could that be stage one of the New Japan AEW relationship? I don't know, because I know the stories out there about there's still a lot of heat there between New Japan and Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, which I believe to be true. I know one of the big cheeses from New Japan was did an interview, I don't know, maybe about a month ago, in which he said he wasn't sure if AEW's stylistically was doing what New Japan wanted to be involved with, but that could all just be part of a storyline to build things up, which is something that Japanese companies have done for decades. But it would seem to me that New Japan, if they want to, because I mean they were in this position, weren't they, before AEW launched, where they seemed to be really expanding in the States, didn't they?
Well, I mean, we do. We should mention that, and this is a shame, because I genuinely don't think this is a good idea. But apparently, with Anthem having bought Access TV, they've basically got rid of New Japan, from the station. And I just think that's a bad move, because it's better to have New Japan in your umbrella and sort of try and build something than to just get rid of them. Because I think getting rid of them almost kind of is sending them to AEW, because you know. In New Japan, I mean, the Wrestle Kingdom shows especially, I'm sure the Wrestle Kingdom shows did really well on Access, and the bigger shows would. So to not have them on there, it seems a bit of a shame. But I mean, if you're New Japan, you can't look at Ring of Honor as they are in 2019 and keep the partnership. You just can't. It doesn't make any sense business-wise.
Yeah, I mean, it devalues you, doesn't it? If you're going to be a partner with another company, there's got to be some parity there. There's got to be a level of equality. You've got to be, you don't want to be, why, if you've got a business relationship with a company in the States, it's supposed to enhance your company, isn't it? Otherwise, what's the point of having it? Mm-hmm. If it's devaluing your talent and making you look second rate, I mean, that MSG show, I mean, it just felt second rate. I'm thinking, how the hell can a show from a sold out Madison Square Garden look second rate? And somehow Ring of Honor achieved it. Well done. So, I mean, it's just like, would they want to be involved in a company like that? And I've got to say, when I saw that show, I immediately thought, how much longer is this relationship going to last? Because New Japan's going to be thinking, well, we need to be involved in a company that's going to make us look better than we are. Otherwise, let's cut ties and let's just wait for something else to come along from which we could benefit. And you're right, Ring of Honor is a company that's, you know, AEW's come along, everyone's talking about them. So people now inevitably have less time to watch other forms of wrestling. Same with NXT being on USA. There's so much competition now for wrestling fans' time that promotions that aren't first rate or big time, unless you're a hardcore diehard fan, they're going to fall by the wayside. It's just inevitable, isn't it, Kenny? It's just, you know, we've only got a certain amount of hours in our week to watch wrestling.
Yeah, there's only a certain amount of time that you've got, and I think with ROH, it's a shame, because ROH had this long kind of tradition of being a company who created the stars of tomorrow in a lot of ways, and now it just seems like, and the weird thing is they've got money behind them, They've got Moneybent, they've got Joe Hendry from Scotland, they've got Bandido, they had Marty Scurll, I don't know if they still have him, but they do have people, but it just...
Marty Scurll was definitely on the Final Battle show. I'm not sure if he's continuing to wrestle there, but he was there.
So he's advertised for a show in January, but apparently he is a free agent as of now. So he's not signed anywhere yet. But, you know, he'd be mad to stay in ROH. Absolutely mental, because in terms of exposure, I assume if you're a wrestler, you want exposure, right? Like, you, and yeah. if you've got AEW and WWE coming after you, why would you stay there?
Why would you indeed? I mean, I would have thought Joe Hendry would be a really good fit for AEW. I mean, he looks the part. We know he's a great talent. He can do it all.
For someone like Joe, I think ROH right now is ideal for him because he's someone who can go in there and be the big fish in the small pond. He can go in there and immediately make some traction for himself so that, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, whatever, he's got... You know, he because eventually you're going to look elsewhere. Who are we going to sign next? And he might be someone you want to go with. But Marty Scurll, that's where Marty Scurll was 4 years ago, five years ago, however long it was. Marty Scurll now, he has to be. I mean, Marty Scurll should be able to turn up on Raw or Dynamite at any point and be a big name.
Yeah, he's definitely outgrown Ring of Honor. I mean, he's been there a long time. And, I mean, he's had his run there, hasn't he? I mean, it's like, what is there left for him there? He's outgrown the company. And you would think that now is the time, or at least within the next couple of months, is the time for him to turn up in AEW, get the big contract, because that's what all wrestlers want. You know, you can't do this when you're 50 or 60. Well, some of them can, but very few can. You want to get the big contract when you're young. Make your money while you can and while it's being offered to you. It's an excellent time for talent like Marty Scurll, who could get that big contract that'll set him up for life. And you would just hope that AEW does a really good introduction for him. You would think they would, but then again, after the closing segment to the December 18 episode of Dynamite, I mean, all bets are off, aren't they, Kenny?
All bets are off. So the other thing I was going to ask you about, with New Japan get the big two-night Wrestle Kingdom shows coming up in January. Do you think at this point that in 2020, a New Japan AEW partnership would be a good idea for either or both brands?
Well, I think it would be, yeah. I mean, if they can make it work. And, you know, looking at those numbers for Dynamite, you know, who has AEW got on the horizon that is going to be a difference maker for them, that's going to get them to 1 million viewers per week? You know, I'm not sure who's going to come over. I'm not sure whether New Japan would have that effect, probably, at least initially. So if they did some sort of invasion storyline with New Japan, maybe they could get some big numbers out of that.
The other thing that I think about with the whole getting people to watch live is, you know, you shouldn't, Cody had said this before, and I do think he's correct, you shouldn't book based on what other people are doing. You should have your own stories. But at the same time, if Rhea Ripley and Shayna Baszler is the main event of NXT, and, you know, Rhea Ripley has this big coronation moment, right, where she's like the next star that's being born, you don't put jobbers times 12 and masks on at the same time.
Well, absolutely right. And this has been part of a long storyline for Rhea, hasn't it? This has been a building block storyline. One thing has led to another. And that was her crowning moment when she defeated Shayna Baszler on the December 18th NXT. Really good match. She'd scored all those big wins over Survivor Series weekend. And it had just been a gradual development, gradual progression. And she just feels like a star. And you contrast that with the women's division in AEW, which I just think's a shambles. I mean, what's going on there? I mean, who's the star? It's just so muddled. I just don't know what's going on week to week.
Half-paced. It's like they've got an idea what they want to do, but it's never... I mean, today actually got announced that Chris Statlander, who's supposed to be the number one contender for the January 1st show against Rio, she is unable to compete due to another commitment. So it's now going to be a four-way with Rio against Emi Sakura, Nyla Rose, and somebody else. And in my mind, I'm going, well, what commitment could she have that we find out about on December 27th? That she can't do on, you know, January 1st. I say that with, I don't want to speculate because maybe it's a personal thing that we don't know about. So we don't want to, you know, obviously throw MD under the bus for anything, but at the same time, that's not a great sign for your women's division that, you know, somebody's won a match and this is going to be your big match in the January 1st show and now she's not there, so it's going to be this four-way that's kind of been thrown out there. So I think the weakest part of AEW's show is actually the women's division.
Well, the Dark Order.
But yeah, the Dark Order is like a different
The Nightmare Collective with Brandi Rhodes at the... My God, you know.
So, okay, let's play a little game, right? So say, let's pretend I've been away on a trip for 3 months, right?
Yeah.
And I've come back. Explain the Nightmare Collective to me. So, I heard that Brandi Rhodes is a group with Awesome Kong. What's going on there, Finn?
Well, they come out and they cut people's hair and then they leave. And they had somebody out there who was a little bit like...
Serena Deeb.
Serena Deeb from the Straight Edge Society in that very memorable segment when she allowed Punk to shave her head, which was far more memorable than the segment that Brandi and Awesome Kong did that was kind of based on that.
So why did they cut hair?
Well, I'm not sure if that's been explained yet. I mean, maybe it's part of a larger plan. Maybe it'll be like Pulp Fiction, Kenny, and it'll all make sense in the end. I don't know. But, I mean, to me, Awesome Kong... This is such a waste of Awesome Kong. I mean, I'm not sure if she can still go in the ring anymore, but I mean, I think she can. And she should be in there, especially against these smaller performers who will really be able to get over as baby faces, you know, against someone like Awesome Kong. And I really feel like that's where she should be. She should not be Brandi Rhodes' henchwoman. I mean, to me, it's just such a waste of her. And I think with the heels have just got to be more villainous. You know, I watched that. It's a really old Clint Eastwood film from about 92, Unforgiven. I'm sure you've seen it, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Clint Eastwood. And the real bad man in that is Gene Hackman. And he's so villainous. And he has to be because the Clint Eastwood character is a really bad man as well. But we kind of root him for the Clint Eastwood character because the Gene Hackman character is even worse. And I just feel like we need more heels like that, that are just, you know, evil to the core and that are just so rotten. We can't wait to see them getting beaten up and get theirs in the end. And I just feel like Awesome Kong could be that person who is the villain that all the baby faces are trying to beat. I just feel like this is her role. And instead, she's just being wasted with Brandi. And
I do wonder if she is recovering from an injury we don't know about.
Possibly, maybe that's the reason. I don't know. But I mean, this it's like some sort of cult that Brandi is the leader of. And there was some bald-headed guy in a segment. I think it was on the December 11th episode. Mm-hmm. She kissed him on the head. I don't think we saw his face, did we?
No, we still haven't seen who he is.
But I mean, there's no tension. There's no drama. There's no interest. I mean, this is as exciting as the average pavement. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's about stimulating as housework. That's what this Nightmare Collective is.
I think the biggest thing for me with it is that, like, I think with Brandi, I just don't, like, I don't buy that as her role. So, like, I think Brandi could do good stuff as a valet if she's put in the right role. I just don't buy that, like, you know, she's doing the jobs that other people don't want to do. What jobs?
Yeah. I mean, she doesn't come across as... She's kind of mild-mannered. She comes across as a nice person. She doesn't seem evil. Do you remember the sinister minister, Jim Mitchell?
Do you remember him?
He's made occasional appearances for Impact. This is the sort of role that he would excel in. I mean, I'm not saying bring him in because he's kind of played out. We've seen him do it too many times. But it's the sort of role that he would do really well. But Brandi, she just doesn't have the pizzazz. That just isn't that. She just doesn't have the fire. It's just not. And she doesn't come across as villainous enough. I mean, it's like she just, I don't know, she's totally miscast as the leader of this cult.
Well, I mean, hopefully next year it will start to make some sense. AEW do have a pretty big show coming up on the 1st of January, unopposed to NXT. Well, NXT have got another taped show That's kind of so with AEW, they've got the is Moxley going to join the Inner Circle? They've got Cody against Darby Allin, Riho defend the title, MJF stipulations for Cody. So hopefully they can kick off the new year with a good show. That's the hope.
Yeah, and just on a brighter note with AEW, I really hope that Moxley does join the Inner Circle. And I think this has been well done. I think Moxley is poised and is a good spot right now. And I think if he joins the Inner Circle, there's a lot of fun to be had there. I think that can be a really good storyline.
Yeah, even if he joins for 3 weeks, like just have him join, you know, to have some fun with it, because that's the, you know, you need to, if you know, because AEW have sold out their next pay-per-view in Chicago on February the 29th. But that's 2 months. You've got 2 months of story to tell. So it makes sense to do some stuff with it.
It absolutely does. And I think you would think it's going to be Moxley versus Jericho, and wouldn't you?
Yes. I'm assuming Moxley, Jericho, and Cody MJF are the top two matches on that show. So, but listen, this is actually our final Power Slam podcast of the decade and of the year. Year sounds a bit piss poor now. We're going to be doing an overrun. We'll talk about some Christmas stuff and all that. But Finn, what are your plugs for the last time this decade?
No new plugs. I just want to say to everyone, thanks everyone for listening and for pledging and supporting the Inside the Ropes brand. You know, we really appreciate it. That's the only plug I have. I'm just saying thanks to people. I've got nothing to plug this
Aww.
Week.
thank you very much for all your support. I know in the world where there are so many podcasts available to you that if you choose ours, we really appreciate it. A lot of people tell us that we are their favourite podcast of the week, and that is very nice to hear.
But you know what? We're not the Young Bucks, you know? If we're doing something wrong, you tell us and we'll put it right.
Or we'll listen and we'll decide whether we should put it right or whether we should keep it as it is. But we will listen is the key. Reading Power Slam in 1997, now being able to do this is mad. You know, Finn's going to be coming and watching the Royal Rumble with me in January. It's a very weird dynamic that now happens, but we have a lot of fun with it. I think we have more fun in 2020. Whether you come and support the live shows, you know, Kenny Omega in April or JR and Conrad in February, get your tickets at the website and all that, or you watch YouTube videos or you listen to this, you know, we really appreciate it. And it keeps us doing what we do. So we hope that you have a good New Year. I hate New Year personally. I think it's just the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, it's the same thing. So there's not, you know, there's no presents, there's nothing to look forward to when the moments happen. But whatever you do, I mean, I'm not going out or anything. I'm just going over to a friend's house who has a dog to sit with dogs.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm always very aware that, you know, the holidays can be tough for people's reflection and all that happens and loss and whatever. But if we can perk you up and make you laugh by having you think of Vince Russo as off milk, then or thinking about whale piss, then that's what we're here for.
Yeah, we're here to cause a ripple in the ocean of smugness of so many wrestling people. And we love it.
We love it. Thank you for listening, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I am sad tonight.